You're listening to Marketplace Weekend. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. We're going to stay with the graduation theme here for a minute and zero in on HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities, and a complex equation involving courts, money, and segregation. But first, meet Stormy Green from Mississippi Valley State University's class of 2019. She's majoring in health and physical education with a minor in biology, and she's got a special role at MVSU. She's Miss MVSU.
This year, I serve from the influential, renowned HBCU from the Oasis of the Mississippi Delta as the 66th Miss Mississippi Valley State University. To be queen means setting a standard. So my intentions are to leave a legacy here at MVSU and carry myself with grace, compassion, and willingness for the future. The thing I love about MVSU is that it's home. I love the small, conclusive environment it holds. Our motto is, we are one goal, one team, and one valley in motion.
Now to the money story. Back in 1975, Green's alma mater and two other HBCUs in Mississippi were involved in a landmark case to desegregate higher education. The Ayers case, as it's known, wound its way through the courts for nearly 30 years and ended in a $500 million settlement for the state's historically black institutions. That money is now running out. Adam Harris wrote about this for the Chronicle of Higher Education. He says the money has done some good, but that public universities in Mississippi are still deeply segregated.
There have been gains. You know, they have new buildings, or sometimes they have new programs. Some of them are sustainable. Some of them aren't sustainable. I think that there are still some very fundamental problems that, you know, the government isn't really focusing in on, since Mississippi, according to them, has proven that they've desegregated their higher education system by settling the Ayers case.
You know, this raises a really interesting question when we talk about desegregation. What does it mean to desegregate an HBCU?
Yeah, and that is the question that people are grappling with. Most people place the onus of desegregation on black colleges. It's almost like blaming them for their history, which they were created to serve an underserved population. You know,
right, a population that wasn't being served by the rest of the educational system.
Yeah, they were essentially shut out of higher education. So there are still some baked-in structural inequities that the Supreme Court talked about, where they're asking questions of the state like, is there a difference between a institution that has been historically underfunded and a institution that's not been historically underfunded? And the state tried to argue that no, because now students have genuine freedom of choice and they can go wherever they want. But we've seen that when that's the case, 99% of white students in Mississippi are going to predominantly white institutions. And black students have started to go to different institutions in Mississippi, but even then, you've started to see enrollment declines among black students at the predominantly white institutions in the state.
We talked to a student who was really proud of being at MVSU and her experience there. And I guess I was hoping you could put into context why a school like that is so important when there is, as you've said, choice, when a student could go anywhere.
I think there are a couple of factors that lead students to choose HBCUs. I personally went to an HBCU. I went to Alabama A&M University. And there's a very important role that black colleges are still playing. You know, there are not that many black colleges in the country. They represent 3% of the nonprofit institutions, public institutions in the country. And they graduate 17% of black students and account for 24% of black science, technology, engineering, and math graduates. Even in Mississippi, it's greater than that, where they had 45% of black first-time students who were earning undergraduate degrees. So I think that the fact that they're still educating a disproportionate amount of students is something that is important, and it puts into context this historical legacy and this role that they're still actively playing for a lot of low-income students and black students.
What happens in Mississippi when the settlement money runs out?
As the former commissioner of their higher education system says, they have to compete. And black colleges in Mississippi are fighting for funding and students with one arm handcuffed by history. And it is going to be difficult for them to compete. So it has yet to be seen. But, you know, other states are looking at this and saying, how are we going to make sure our black colleges are sustainable?
Yeah, before I let you go, I want to ask you about what's happening in Maryland, because there's a sort of similar situation being hashed out there. Can you explain it for us a little bit?
It is similar, but they're concerned that if they accept, you know, the offer that the state has put on the table, where the governor said that we'll give you up to $100 million over the span of a couple of years, that if they do that, they will end up in the same position that Mississippi has ended up in. And so they are really fighting for sustainable programs, you know, distinctive programs that will draw students, and they want the state to make sure that none of those programs are duplicated, because that's one of their main issues. A black college will get a program, and then a white college not too far down the road will get a similar program. And where will the student end up going, or the white student end up going? They'll probably end up going to the white college as opposed to the black college.
Adam Harris is a staff writer for The Atlantic, and he wrote about HBCUs and funding for the Chronicle of Higher Education. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.